Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to the Nile or Nine podcast. It's myself, Niall, and Andrea Cleary here. How are you, Andrea?
I'm good, thank you.
In this week's podcast, we are going to talk about one of my favorite musicians and basically spending a lot of time the last week delving back into his back catalogue. I've realized how much time I've spent listening to this artist and how much of his music has meant to me over the years, and how much he's been a constant artist in my life's history, mm-hmm. in my time listening to music. That is a man called Kieran Hebden, the English electronic musician, more readily known as Fortet for many people. And so there's a lot of stuff has been happening for Kieran Hebden in the last few years, DJing with Skrillex and Fred Again. But there's a lot of discussion, there's a lot of things we can talk about. What I want to do is just take you all the way back to the start of what Fortet is all about, where he came from, his music, and just really discuss what it is that I think is brilliant about his music and why he is as revered as he should be. And so that's what we're going to do on this week's episode 229 of the 909 podcast. It is all about Fortet. So yeah, we're going to be discussing a lot about Fortet's music from where he began to where he is now. And yeah, there is an ulterior motive for doing this, because on November 8th, in The Big Romance, we are going to be presenting a listening party around Fortet's album Rounds from 2003, which we'll get into, but is considered one of his best albums. And what we're essentially going to do is have a nice little listening party, a gathering in The Big Romance on Wednesday, November 8th, for a small 40, 45 people or something like that. So it'll be the first monthly listening party. We're going to tie it into the podcast where possible. It'll be what we'll do is do a podcast related to the album. And then in real life, you and ourselves will have an opportunity to come together and listen to that album that we're going to discuss and talk about as well. This is Fortet Rounds, the first one. And myself and Andrea will be presenting the first of this kind of series of listening parties on Wednesday, November 8th, in partnership with the Big Romance. As you know, Big Romance, if you've ever been there, has a lovely sound system by a man from West Cork called Toby Hatchett. And really couldn't think of a better place for something like this. So really chance to appreciate a modern classic album. And that's what we're kind of going to go for in our series, Modern Classics. So yeah, look out for that. That's on sale this week through Nine on Eventbrite for Tet Rounds listening party. So yeah, let's get into it. Let's talk about Fortet and his music, because as I said, it has become, I saw Fortet play live with his band Fridge in 2000, maybe 1999 or something like that. So really, like, when I started going to gigs, I was living in Kildare. I was going up to see Super Furry Animals, one of the other bands I absolutely loved at the time. And I remember going to see them in the Olympia. And there was a couple of supports. There was Caitl Kenig, who was a singer-songwriter, and Fridge. And I was just like, who are these lads? They just looked like they really did at the time. It was 6th of July, 1999. Super Animals and Fridge. And I went to see them and I was like, who are these lads? They're doing this weird music. And I guess at the time, I was 1999, well, I was 17 and I wasn't really familiar with like what kind of music they were making and the kraut and kind of post-rock stuff. So I'm going to talk a bit about that as well. So Fortet, Kieran Hebden, born in London in 1977, to a South African-born Indian mother and a sociology lecturer father. You've heard of the Brit School, perhaps, Andrea, have you?
I have, indeed, yes.
But have you heard of the Elliott School? Because
very vaguely. Apparently produced, yeah. Everyone
well,
went there.
I'm going to tell you. Fortet, Kieran Hebden, went to the Elliott School in Putney. So Elliott was an art-centered secondary school, had an emphasis on visual and performing arts. It is famously used as the school hall in the film Love Actually. And did you know who else was a pupil of Elliott School?
I don't know, Niall. Could it be Burial?
It is. It is. Will Bevan, aka Burial, is one of many students, including Joe Goddard and Alexis Taylor from Hot Chip. Mm. We have the Peter Green, the founder of Fleetwood Mac. All three members of the XX and the original Fort member, Baria Corsari. Herman Lee, the guitarist with Dragon Force, members of the Maccabees, and most pertinent.
Tails off a bit at the end there, doesn't it?
hold on a second. I'm keeping some of the best for last.
Okay.
Pierce Brosnan.
Well.
Bond man and actor in such classics as Taffin.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
That's his best work.
Niall, it's 9:30 in the morning. You can't hit me with a maybe you shouldn't be living here without warning.
Oh, you know. Pierce Brosnan there in the classic Taffin. Where is the set? Bray or Greystones or something like that?
I don't know.
Very weird. Anyway, three other people who were in the Elliott School were a band called Fridge. That was Kieran Hebden, Adem Ilhan, and Sam Jeffers. They formed the band in Fridge in 1995 in the school, and I think it was a school that was definitely, if it didn't teach music directly, it was a good atmosphere, a good environment in which music seemed to thrive. Joe Goddard of Hot Chip said that there was a spirit, if you want to do something, just go and do it, you didn't need permission in our school. They signed their first record deal when Hebden was 15. And he said in 2009 of the school, I'd rehearse with my band at lunch and for hours at school without any interference. When I was at school, drum and bass happened. Our teachers would let us set up big sound systems and have drum and bass parties during lunchtime breaks. We'd be in a drama room with machines and strobe lights for half an hour, dancing to Super Sharp Shooter or something, blasting out a huge volume. So you can imagine here going into your school and then all of a sudden, you're like, is this a normal school? No, it's playing Super Sharp Shooter. All the kids are playing this. Super Sharp Shooter, shoot it. So definitely an atmosphere and an environment in which that musicians thrived, as we've seen, and actors as well. So yeah, they signed their first record deal when Kieran Hebden was 15 and released their first album, C-Fax, on Trevor Jackson's Output label in March 1997. Their music was very much inspired by post-rock and crowd rock bands like Noi and Can, along with kind of folk and electronic music of the day. Like, Kieran Hebden played guitar and used samples. Adem played bass. It was drums. Sam Jeffers was on the drums. There was no vocals. It was very much a prototype of what, a live prototype almost of what Fortet became. They made music for about 4 years between 1997 and 2001, and released four albums in just their 4 years together and 10 singles. Hebden said that they were trying to make music that didn't sound like anything else. All of us not quite skilled enough to translate the sound in our head onto cassette, but creatively filling the gaps, using them and making them integral. They had an album in 2001 called Happiness, which was probably their standout of their work. And I'll play a bit of a song that I love called Cut Up Piano and Xylophone from that. So yeah, Happiness is described as a sprawling pastoral masterpiece, an innovative mix of acoustic clatter, electronic experimentation, hip-hop production techniques, and experimental rock arrangements. Along with Hebden's blossoming solo project Fortet, Happiness dragged the most compelling elements of the typically self-serious electronic indie and avant rock of the 1990s and maritime to eclectic folk and spiritual jazz for the new century. And I think that's kind of like a good template for a lot of what would follow immediately. Fridge would occasionally play with Badly Drawn Boy, actually, as his live band around that time. And Happiness, if you're interested in it, was meticulously restored, reconstructed, and remastered from the original tapes by Kieran Hebden himself for release this year. So it's out in vinyl again. But while working with Fridge, Hebden began a degree in maths and computer sciences at the University of Manchester, alongside members of Simian Mobile Disco. So whilst Fridge never broke up, their interests diverged and they started making music separately. Adem was known for making kind of very much folky kind of electronic music, more on the singer-songwriter side. But sometime between late 1996 and early 1997, Kieran Hebden decided he wanted to begin experimenting with DJ Shadow style sample scapes, which was, you know, kind of the dominant cultural stuff in terms of press at the time, like DJ Shadow, like creating music out of old samples and stuff like that, very much informed by hip-hop and all that kind of stuff as well. The rest of the band weren't too keen on the idea, so he decided to pursue that as a solo undertaking. It was kind of and then later that year, 1997, he actually released his first project, which under the name Fortet. He started 4T Recordings and released a single called Double Density, which sounded a bit like... So you're kind of hearing a little bit of a preview of kind of the sound to come there. It's very much like it's organic acoustic instruments, electronic instruments, but also very much live. He began releasing music as Fortet in 1998. He had a 36-minute track in 1998 called Just 3625. I'd actually never heard this until yesterday, I don't think. So... here we go. It has a kind of jazzy beat, folktronic thing going on. Let's have a listen to 12 minutes in to 3625. You know, starting to hear some of the DNA of his sound there for sure in terms of where his music would go. But in 1999, he released his debut album as Fortet, called Dialogue on Output as well, Trevor Jackson's label. It was his first full-length album and definitely has a bit more of the hip-hop inspiration with kind of the jazz vibe. Here's a song called Cheer On from that record. So yeah, jazzy kind of stuff going on there for sure. And I think you can hear a blueprint of what is to come as well. Later that year, Fortet remixed a track from Aphex Twin, actually, from Selected Ambient Works Volume 2, a track we possibly talked about before on our Aphex Twin episode. There was a Warp compilation called 10 Plus 3, a remix compilation celebrating Warp Records. And he did a remix of Selected Ambient Works, one of the untitled songs from it, which just subtly tweaked it into different directions. And it sounded like this. So kind of bringing a jazzy element to proceedings there in terms of the ambient stuff. So yeah, in 2001, Fortet released his second album, which was called Pause, which was released on Domino Records. More about that later. And was featured more folk and electronic samples, which was quickly dubbed Folktronica from the press at the time. Here's a song called Everything Is All Right from the album Pause. And after that, it was the album that probably made his name and gave him his big breakthrough, and one that we're going to focus on for our live event on November 8th, the Listen Closely event at the Big Romance, our listening party, is, of course, 2003's Rounds. Probably his big career breakthrough, considered one of the best albums of the decade. It was where the identity of all of his interests musically, like jazz, folk, electronic, hip-hop, ambient, all seemed to coalesce in this new form that had an identity that felt uniquely his own. It's music that was melancholic, euphoric, cerebral, yet dreamy, pensive and immediate. I'm going to play one of your favorite songs, Andrea, My Angel Rocks Back and Forth here. So let's have a listen to that song. That is My Angel Rocks Back and Forth, of course. A song that, for me, I love the kind of breathy, rhythmic heart to that.
Oh, it's just very pretty, isn't it? It's very, I think most of what made up Rounds was samples. Like the vast majority of what you hear on Rounds is samples, but I suppose it's why the term Folktronica was coined to describe this album.
it's that he makes samples sound really organic, and that song kind of feels like there's a human playing it. There's a human aspect to it. It doesn't feel as digital as a lot of other of this kind of music. So yeah, part of that's the breathiness, the space. It's also very just very pretty song. Yeah, I love it. I think it's probably my favorite off Rounds, but I love Rounds.
I mean, it's a great album, and it's one that we'll play in full on November 8th. If you want to come to that event, it's tickets will be on Eventbrite. I'll put a link in the description. But yeah, he talked to Spin, Colin Joyce's Spin, in 2013 as a retrospective for the album, 10-year retrospective, and kind of shared some of the details about how he made it. And he says, "I was in my early 20s when I made the record, and I was living in London on my own. I was meeting loads of new people and started traveling all over the place. I just remembered at a time living in a little apartment and the people that I was hanging out with really vividly. A couple of relationships starting to end during that record. In the middle of making it, I toured opening for Radiohead in Spain and Portugal. And it made me rethink live electronic music when I hadn't thought about it that much. So when I hear Rounds, it's like looking at an old diary. It was all done in the front room of an old apartment, of that little apartment. I had my computer set up with records and things. I was recording all the time. I wanted to making music be a part of my day-to-day life, the same as eating and sleeping. Never been the sort of person to go and spend 10 hours in the studio every day. The recording was happening all the time. I was so committed to the idea when I was doing Rounds that music was something that should be going on alongside life all the time. I'd get up in the morning, watch TV, make a little music, hang out with friends, go to dinner, come back, make a little music. Music was constantly happening. Here is a track called She Moves She from the record. Yeah, it had that glitchy kind of sampled quality as well. He says, sometimes on Rounds, I take samples from 20 to 30 records to make a song. On one level, it was this bedroom recording, but on lots of levels, it's the most complicated and sophisticated technical recording you can imagine. If you tried to recreate it from absolute scratch with only a pile of instruments and a tape machine, you'd have a lot of trouble on your hands. I wasn't interested in human performance on the record of any sort. I tried to create illusions. You listen to it and you're not really sure what you're hearing. It sounds like a guitar player or something, but then the guitar line slows down and moves backwards. Moments that are impossible would suddenly happen. The music would pull you in a ways that didn't make sense. I think that speaks to a lot of the music made at the time. There was definitely an experimentation of manipulation of music and sounds, and that was a lot very interesting at the time. You know, like that, you're like, oh my god, that sounds like a guitar, but it's not a guitar. It is a guitar, but it's sampled and it's doing things that a guitar can't do. And while that might be taken for granted maybe a bit more now, it's certainly a case of for me, when I listened to that record at that time, I was so enamored with it. I was like, this is like, I have not heard music like this before. And and also, you know, it's all being instrumental as well. I never felt like I was missing anything, because I was like, it's so deep and textured, and there's so much going on. And it speaks to you in a different way than, music with vocals.
Yeah, it doesn't lack emotion. You know, it's a very emotional,
it's a big
record.
Heart.
Yeah,
like Rounds has a huge heart.
Yeah, I agree with that. It is, and there's something of youth in it as well. There's the kind of, you know, abandon and experimentation and just that feeling of like, well, why can't I do this kind of thing, and why can't this be as beautiful as non-electronic music, music that isn't created with technology. And yes, it's a very, very beautiful album, and it's full of emotion, I think.
Yeah.
As a lot of his work
absolutely.
Is.
Like the heartbeat that's there present.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like children's toys and stuff on it as well. Like it's definitely, it has an environment, you know?
Yeah. I remember at the time we were living in college, myself and my pal, and we listened to this album a lot. And the last track on the record, Slow Jam, has that exact like squeaky toy thing.
Yeah.
And we were living with a person at the time who obviously wasn't into any of this kind of music, more into like Phantom FM kind of stuff.
Okay.
Which is fine, but it was like, did not understand what was going on. She's like, why, what's going on here? Why is there like a funny noise in the song? And I was like, it sounds good.
Yeah.
It sounds really good. And then she just could not understand it. She was like, I don't know why you're listening to music that has a dog toy in it or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah. But maybe it's a dog toy rather than a child's toy. I can't remember. I always thought of it one as a or child's the other. Toy. Yeah, I don't know why.
Yeah, well, either one. It's like somebody stood on it accidentally and then they sampled it.
Yeah. So. And I love that. I love when people use kind of natural environment stuff, but like human environments, not necessarily. Like I do love, you know, people sampling like nature and the sound of wind and trees and stuff, but I also love kind of using very human environments as a space to experiment in. I think that's really cool, like traffic and stuff like that, you know.
Kieran Hevden on Round says, I found my own sound. At the time, my main criticism of my own music was that it felt too much like a product of his influences. On some tracks from Fortet's pre-Rounds albums, you can hear, well, I've been listening to this record and this record, so I smashed them together to make a song. My favorite music sounds like it doesn't come from anywhere. It's around the time I did Rounds that people like Rodney Jerkins and Timbaland were putting out their absolute masterpieces. A record like Whitney Houston's It's Not Right, But It's Okay, which Jerkins co-produced, would come out and it didn't sound like anything before it. On one hand, it's experimental, but it also managed to sound very human. It's a number one chart smash, but it has thumb pianos and drum machines. And yeah, just in case you need it, here's what it sounds like.
Friday night, you and your boys went out to eat. Then they hung out, but you came home around 3, as you did. If 6 of y'all went out, then 4 of you were really cheap, yeah. 'Cause only 2 of you had dinner. I found your credit card receipt. It's not right.
Yeah, it's Whitney, It's Not Right, But It's Okay, co-produced by Rodney Jerkins, so mentioned by Kieran Hebson there as an example of music at the time that was kind of inspiring him. And we'll get more into that because I think there's lots of music around, especially the pop sphere, that Fortet is increasingly drawn to across
I've decided just now that we should do a Timbaland episode.
Oh, yes.
It's time. It's time Timbaland got his dues from the 909 podcast.
Yeah. So let's play another little bit of a song called As Serious As Your Life. So after Rounds, things started to take off for Fortet. He became a going concern in terms of like touring. As he said, he started playing with the likes of Radiohead. He remixed Radiohead songs. He was doing his live shows of his own. And at the time, you know, there was a lot of people doing like in small clubs, doing like live laptop sets and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But he really made it part of what he did in a live setting that was kind of charming. Have you ever seen the RBMA video where he explains his like performance stuff? I'll play some of it for you now because it's really like worth seeing because I think it explains a lot about him and it explains a lot about like his methods at the time. Like he talks about, you know, Cool Edit, which is like an audio software thing. Like that you might use to edit a podcast. He was using that live on stage to like kind of just mess around with. He would just be like pointing a mouse at it and like playing with it. So he kind of had this in the same way that like Burial didn't like using, you know, the grid. Like there was elements of what Fortet did where he was like, No, I actually like just messing around with things, and that was a big part of what he did. So let's play. I might edit this down.
So with all the tracks on this computer, on Cool Edit, I've got melodic parts like this. The wonderful thing about Cool Edit is you just click on any bit with a mouse, it just starts looping that section. And if you click ridiculously fast, you get all that kind of like finesse, Migo Records type of wicked like kind of electronic stuff without running any max patch or any shit like that. You're just clicking as fast as you possibly can on the screen. So now we've got this. I can do stuff with it, you know? I really like this because it's not a plug-in, it's not a synthesizer, it's not an instrument or anything, but it's like so live. You know, it's never ever going to be remotely the same at any show, and it allows me to mess with the melodies and stuff. So over here, I've just triggered the version of the whole song without drums. You know? So at the show, I might have been noodling around like this for a few minutes, kind of getting the atmosphere I want in the room, and then people recognize like a bit of they'll recognize melodies and things maybe from the song off the record. But now the real kick is gonna come is the actual main hooks and stuff from the song are gonna come in with everything. And then, and this is the moment, you know, everybody in the room is like, oh shit, yeah. You know, totally like, you know, everyone's cheering, it's all turning around. And I've got total control, like, I've got total control of that moment, you know, and I'm able to like hold off. I think during this set, I do lots and lots of tension building, like playing with all these elements, holding it off for a long time, suddenly dropping the main element I know people know. So people know this tune, it was like the opening track on my last record, so they're familiar with it, but they're hearing a version that's totally unlike anything on the record.
Anyway, that's just, there's a really fascinating, it's like 7 minute long setup video about how he did his live stuff around this time. So after Rounds, then came a number of albums, Everything Ecstatic, from 2005. He was starting to do a lot of remix work and collaboration stuff. So first of all, he played with the drummer Steve Reed, the jazz drummer. He did some improv and electronics kind of music with him. I remember going to see him as part of the Fringe show, I believe, in the Spiegel Tent down in the Docklands in Dublin. Him and Steve Reed playing in the Spiegel Tent. They released an album. Most notable album probably is 2007's Tongues, a mix of what they were doing there. This is a song from that called The Sun Never Sets.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
So yeah, 2005, 2006, 2007, it was really the time when Fortet, Kieran Hebden, began to collaborate and do more remixes. I mean, he was quite a prolific remixer, clearly a good way to make money at the time, but also he made some like brilliant work. He did remixes for the likes of Mad Villain, Block Party, Superfly Animals, Baddie Drum Boy, Beth Orton, Boom Bip, Battles, Kings of Convenience, Bonobo, The XX, and Radiohead, as we mentioned as well. A lot of remixes he did. So in 2006, Domino actually released Remixes, a two-disc compilation of Fortet's work, and featuring 12 of his remixes was selected by him, and then a second disc comprising of every official remix to date that he has done to his work, essentially, as well, by other artists. So I'm actually going to take the time to indulge you here in two of my favorite remixes. Here's the Mad Villain one that I absolutely adore. It's Money Folder. He did four Fortet remixes. So clearly a big fan of Mad Villain.
I was going to pick this as well, and I had a feeling you'd cover it.
Good.
This is awesome.
Well, I've got two different remixes that kind of show the both sides. So here is the Money Folder Fortet remix. Rockets won't burst, clones just don't curse the throne. On his own microphone, bring it everywhere he go, so he could bring it to you live in stereo. Panic, can't understand it, ban it. The underhanded ran it, planned it, and left him stranded. The best, any who profess will be remanded. Yes sir, request permission to be candid. Granted, I don't think we can handle a style so rancid. He flipped it like Madden, did the old ass. I wrote this rhyme lightly off of two or three heinies, and boy was they fine, G. One black, one Spanish, one Chinese. So that's a great remix. That's one of my favorites from the Fortet remixes of Mad Villain. And then one of his close friends, Caribou, Dan Snaith as well. He often played with and DJed with a lot. And there's a remix of the song Melody Day, which I think is just beautiful. Featuring Adem as well, actually doing some of the vocals, and Luke Lalonde as well. So here's the Fortet remix of Melody Day. Melody Day, what have I done? Hearts are locked up tight again. And when I pray, it's all begun. And when you smile, it melts away again. So locked up tight again. And when I pray, it's all begun. And when you smile, it melts away again. Know the original of that song, it's kind of has loads of beats and kind of takes it along, where Fortet just stripped it all the way back and did something really different with it. And I think that's what he was always really good at, is like, he's not just, I'm gonna make this a Fortet song. He's like, I'm gonna take this and like see what I can do with it. And I love that stuff about him. And I think around this time then he started to really you know, collaborate and started making music of more of a dance floor persuasion. So Andrea, there was we mentioned Will Bevan earlier on, but he did come back and play with his old schoolmate at one point, who then was, you know, I mean, Burial didn't make music with anyone else at this time. He was Burial, he'd made Untrue, he was going off doing his own thing, and he really kind of like, all of a sudden then, there was this was the seismic event in my world. It was like, Fortet and Burial have made songs together. What's going on?
Old pals together at last. It's one of those things where it's like, what year is this? Like
2009.
It's like, lads, this should have happened way before now.
Yeah, yeah. You were in school together. Like, come on.
I know. I love the Burial and Fortet collab. They also later did like a three-way collab with Thom Yorke as well, which is even more of an intersection of my interests. Like, I take the Burial Thom Yorke side, you take the Burial Fortet side, and together the three of them make the perfect collaboration for us. But yeah, one of the songs you asked me to send over, some of my faves, one of the songs was Moth, which is the Fortet and Burial collaboration that was I think recorded in 2009, released on like a two-sided EP, but only physical release until, geez, I think it was like 10 years later after The Suit. Which
there was definitely some like MP3s and stuff of it around the time, because like
there was nothing official from
it was way
from later. Record labels, because there was still, you know, issues going on with the label and streaming and all that stuff, which we'll get into later. But Moth is the one that I chose to kind of highlight, just because I think it's just kind of outrageously beautiful, and it's so like and yet unlike both of them. Like, they've created something that is the best of both of them. Do you know, it's beautiful. I love how kind of textured and crunchy it is. Like some elements of it sound like they're sort of wrapped in wool or something. And then there's those that they're kind of really like crunchy. It's just like, it's really lovely. If you've got like, I hate when people say this, but if you have a decent set of headphones listening to it, it's like, it's just, there's something fizzy that comes out of that track that I really, really enjoy. And Wolf Club is the other, the other song that came out with this, and it's different, but it's kind of equally as beautiful. So I love this collaboration.
And like you said, just really encapsulated both of their own sounds, but out like leaning one way and the other. It was like, okay, yeah, there's a sensibility of Fortet. There's also, I hear Burial's textures and stuff like that as well. So just really great, really interesting.
There was a bit of conversation at the time around it. The time I was reading the contemporaneous Pitchfork review, and the person writing it, Philip Sherburne, wasn't sure initially when writing it if both artists collaborated on both tracks, or if it was, you know, Fortet did one of them, Burial did the other. And then there's a correction kind of at the end. Kieran Hebden has confirmed that he and Burial did indeed collaborate on both tracks. But it's interesting that it's unclear, you know, the major push of both of their influences and sound isn't like very clearly set out, you know, like it is a collaboration, like, and it sounds like something different to what both of them do, you know?
Yeah, so perfect collaboration, really. So just
ideal
a melt of both of their sensibilities and styles. So really good, and they would continue to. Well, I mean, they've done it a couple of times now, and probably do another one soon. To be honest, probably do another like collab on that front. But yeah, around that time there was, we're talking about 2009, 2010, and I think you can really hear what happens to Fortet's music is that he really starts to bring this dance music sensibility further into the music. There's a lot more 4/4 beats as opposed to like these skittering, jazzy kind of drums that happen. Mm. And I think that you can really hear that in the record, There Is Love in You. Kind of informed by a time when, you know, he was playing more gigs, he was playing more DJ stuff. You can really hear that he was starting to develop his music in the dance arena more. Here is, for me, the absolute highlight from the There Is Love in You, the second track, Love Cry. So yeah, around that time, 2010, we're talking about, Fortet was playing a lot more in club called Plastic People, a London club that was quite influential. And I think that goes some way to explaining why he was making more dance music, because he was DJing more, he was testing out his music in a club environment. Plastic People I'd never been to, but heard loads of good things about the sound system in particular there. He was hanging out with Floating Points, Sam Shepard at the time, doing a lot of DJing together. And so I think it just really started to seep into his music more and more and more. And you really hear that from 2010 onwards. And I think really he was doing production work for the likes of Nina Cherry. He was collaborating with the Syrian electronic singer Omar Suleiman, and generally just expanding his universe. To the point where, you know, like in 2021, he was producing a Madlib record, really good record called Sound Ancestors. So really kind of keeping up the kind of collaborative streak a lot of the time. But it was really around this time where, as well as like we're talking about albums like Pink from 2012, Beautiful Rewind in 2013, you're starting to hear jungle and garage music really come into his music a bit more, and kind of surprising at the time for me. I remember 2013, like 10 years ago, being like, oh my God, Fortet's doing all this other stuff now. And he had a side project called Percussions, where he was releasing a lot of different music. He also he became quite prolific in terms of releasing stuff, and also being quite obfuscating in terms of like how he was releasing it, whether he was releasing under his own name or some other name like Percussions. He had a song that people were that he called. The track I've been playing that people kept asking about, that Joy used in his RA mix and Daphne played on Boiler Room from 2013. It was like these kind of like little nuggets were being released here and now and then. And as long with the albums to come, which were Morning Evening on Text Records in 2015, he started releasing his own as well. I mean, music in terms of independent. And we got New Energy, 16 Oceans, Text Records, Parallel. So 2015, 2017, 2020, two records in 2020, Parallel as well. So
we've skipped the formation of the boy band in 2011, which was Kieran, Burial and Tom York. Well, when they released their first 12-inch with two songs, Ego and Mirror. And then not until 9 years later, I think 2020, they released Her Revolution and His Rope. So they got back together and released those two. So they've had two collaborations that we know of so far, one 2011 and one 2020 as well. So continuing to collaborate with excellent people.
Yeah, let's hear a bit of that from Her Revolution, from Burial Fortet and Tom York.
Do you know what I'd do for an entire album?
Yeah, I mean, and that, I think he always kept that streak up for sure. But I think in his solo work then, he had a lot of kind of music that was more dance floor club orientated, like here's the percussions. I think he always had this like lovely beauty to the records as well, which is like Euphoria and Melancholy is really two things that are very at the forefront of his music. Here's a couple of things. Here are Digital Arpeggios from Percussions. This is a record that really like slowly builds up over 9 minutes to the point where it's like gets a bit busier. So really making use of club dynamics in the music as well. Here's ASCII Bot as well, another track I love. And then there's the likes of Unicorn from Beautiful Rewind. Almost like lovely sound design kind of stuff. Here's 2017 from New Energy. And we'll play a bit of Planet as well from that record. And then an example from the Pink record as well. This is Pinnacles. So, Andrea, there was a reason, though, why he started to release a lot of this music on his own label. And let's talk a bit about that now, because I think he always had beautiful music on that record. He was very prolific. But one thing that we all noticed, I think, especially became much more obvious when he started releasing music as KH,
yeah,
is that he wasn't releasing music under the name Forthead anymore. Mm. And there was a very good reason for that, right?
Yeah. So he basically, there's a relatively infamous lawsuit between himself and his record label Domino. He filed a lawsuit against them in 2021. Which sought damages from the label. Basically, the deal he had with his label, which was signed, God, what year? I can't remember.
It would have been probably,
but it was like
before 1999, anyway, yeah, 97 yeah. or so.
So streaming wasn't.
Oh, sorry. He signed it in February 2001.
Yeah. So streaming wasn't on the cards just yet. Like, we're talking, if people are listening to music digitally, it's MP3 files, you know. So the deal he had with his label was that he was entitled to 18% of his royalty share was 18% of sales of physical copies of his record, because it was only physical copies that existed. But once streaming emerged, the label continued to apply this 18% number to his streaming revenue, which isn't fair. You know, that's not how kind of modern streaming that's not how modern record deals deal with streaming, you know. So he sued them for around about £70,000, and the label took the album's Pause from 2001, Rounds from 2003, and Everything Ecstatic from 2005 down from streaming services while it was ongoing, presumably worrying that if they do lose this case, that revenue will continue to rack up for as long as people are able to stream those records. Basically, there was an attempt of settling it out of court. The label at one point were arguing that he was actually only entitled to 75% of that 18%. I'm not sure why. I tried to find out why that was agreed, but that settlement was not reached outside of court. In 2022, it was announced that he had won the suit, and he ended up getting just under £60,000, and that was kind of backdated money to rectify the underpayment of his streaming stuff. And his stuff went back up on Spotify and Apple Music and YouTube Music and whatever other streaming things were happening. So he did he put out a series of tweets announcing that it was all rectified. So actually, I'll read you Domino's statement. Domino are pleased that Kieran Hebden has chosen to settle his claim and accepted financial terms first offered to him in November 2021. That's a bit salty. Kieran's claim arose from differing interpretations of specific clauses in a contract entered into by Kieran and Domino in 2001 in the pre-streaming era, and the application of these clauses to streaming income. Since 2021, Kieran has added to and pursued his claim despite numerous attempts by Domino to settle the matter. Neither the courts nor the settlement terms have made any determination as to how streaming should be categorised or streaming income split. The case now having been settled, we're glad to be able to dedicate our full attention to resourcing and supporting our artists, and we wish Kieran continued success in his career. And as you can imagine, the whole thing ended with Kieran Hebden. I find it weird that they call him Kieran in that statement. Do you? Do you feel it should be Hebden, right? It just feels a bit familiar or something. I don't know. But anyway, he left the label, and then he was able to keep making music under his own label, Tex Records, and was able to release music as Forthead again, which is good. I think at the time, like when it was announced, it felt like it might be a bit of a landmark case, because there wasn't really much to go off legally in terms of like a precedent when it came to streaming royalty. So yeah, unless you had a specific clause in your contract, which every artist now will have, every artist post the streaming era will have some kind of clause in their contract that explains how the royalties work. But I expected there to be a lot more artists coming out with claims like this. I was surprised that it didn't seem to have the, pun intended, domino effect of, you know, more artists seeking kind of back payments for streaming. So, but still, you know, he got his money.
Early days yet. I mean, legal things take a long time to come into fruition.
Yeah, that's true. It was only 2 years ago, so.
Yeah, but it also, it does speak to kind of a legacy, streaming royalties and stuff like that. And I'm sure there's plenty of people who looked at that and went like, oh, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
It's my time to. But also it could be a unique situation. You don't know, like, background of maybe labels were contacted by artists who were like, this is clearly not right. And then it doesn't go to court because, you know, there's a precedent here now.
Yeah.
Because he's won the case. So, yeah.
Yeah, maybe, it's interesting it as well. There was something in one of his statements, he said that, Fortet said that he wasn't given the opportunity to buy that music from his label. Now, obviously, very famously, Taylor Swift has had a similar issue in that she was blocked from buying her music from her label. And she's gone and just re-recorded all her stuff. So, like, between the Fortet case and how Taylor Swift has kind of dealt with that situation, I do think that we are probably going to see more stuff like this happening with artists who want to take back control of their their discography and of their music, and, you know, rightly so.
Yeah, absolutely. So that does explain really why Fortet was releasing as KH for the last couple of years as well.
Thing where people weren't sure? I seem to remember you and me doing a podcast and you playing a KH track a long time ago, like first year of the podcast, and I seem to remember you telling me that it wasn't officially confirmed. People were assuming it was him, but we didn't fully know.
Yeah, he was releasing under a number of different aliases, but also like that nonsensical Wing Ding stuff that he started doing at around that time.
Yeah.
You know, like I have it in a playlist here, but I can't possibly pronounce it or tell you how to search for it.
Yeah, it's just symbols.
Yeah, it's like the famous playlist that he started creating, which has like 4,000 songs on it now, which is on his profile, which he would suddenly drop in tracks, but no one knew what the tracks were called. Some of them actually ended up being released as KH songs. So this song here, I only realized last night, I was like, oh, that's the one Feelings that I have on my DJ stuff.
Mm.
But it's not called that on streaming.
I've got feelings.
So yeah, definitely had been releasing a lot of stuff in the last couple of years, which is obviously, look, shout out to the Discord. This is for you. Here's looking at your pager, the big one from last year. Of course, that is Looking at Your Pager, Song of the Summer last year. Song of the Year, sampling the R&B group 3LW, No More Baby, I'm Do It Right, which is something he was doing at the time last year, especially. He had Only Human as well, just before that, sampling Nelly Furtado. Here is that. So yeah, over the last 10 years, his music has definitely gone more 4-4 and club focused, as he's been given probably more of those opportunities to play, and which has led, as we said here, is like he's sampling 3LW, he's sampling Lenny Furtado, he's been kind of, some of my favorite work of his is actually from some of his unofficial stuff. And I might just talk about that now because I think it's kind of relevant. So he did this amazing remix of Grimes back in the day called, it was Skin. It was a sample. It was a a recording of Skin. Let's play a bit of this because I think this is just so beautiful, right? So he never actually officially released that track. That is a version of a track he made of Grimes' Skin, and he just remixed it on for his own, played it on Rinse FM 2013. But he did that a lot over the last 10 years, and he would clearly would take music from a more pop sphere and take it into a different way. And one of my favorite tunes of his of the last couple of years is a song called Baby from 16 Oceans, which actually features an Ellie Goulding sample. So let's have a listen to that one. You might know it from the drone, cool drone, weird video that accompanied it. Here's Baby. And I can think you can hear there what he has done in the best possible way, like taking some of that lovely textured electronic stuff that he did in the past and he's known for and bringing it into kind of a clubby environment. Like not many producers these days, if they are making club music, will bring in Birdsong as a kind of a breakdown. So that's kind of nice. And I think that's something that he still continues to do. And I think that's what he's so good at. And I think when he does remixes as well, there was a great one of Churches from a number of years ago that I remember playing at the early days of Luma. And I was like, wow, this is, it sounded so amazing in a club. And I'm going to play a bit of that now. It's his remix of Leave a Trace. I that actually absolutely slays in a club, and it's one of my fond memories of early days of Lubo 8 years ago. I was playing that song and waiting for the drop, basically, and being like, hold on, hold on, it's gonna come. And you're like, it is a bit like almost, I mean, you have to kind of like go through the cringe a little bit when you're DJing sometimes, and you're like, no, this is gonna be worth it. Yeah. Just like, stay with me, it's fine. And you just kind of be like,
Father knows, I know there's no beats children. Here.
Yeah, I will. It will all make sense in a moment. Mm-hmm. And that is one of those examples when that happens. So yeah, I think you're hearing there in those 10 years and a deeper engagement with pop music and a deeper engagement with music of that sphere. So kind of makes a lot more sense then that when it came to a couple of years ago and Fortet had been DJing everywhere and playing this kind of music, and then all of a sudden this bromance developed between himself, Fred again, and Skrillex. So this whole thing came from Fred again being the kind of man who wanted to meet Fortet and charmed his way into saying hello to him and then hanging out, and then brought basically Skrillex in. And of course, as we know, Skrillex was known for being the dubstep bro, you know, and in recent years has kind of been trying to get away from that. And so what's been happening really is that the three of them have become this kind of kindred spirit. In a Guardian interview earlier this year, Hebden talks about his friendships as a carass, which is a Kurt Vonnegut term about a network of kindred spirits who faithfully stumble into your life. He says his first carass in the 90s was Fridge, and then Caribou Dance Nate. He says was one of those. He said Dan Snape noticed them playing a board game at a festival and instinctively joined in. Mm. And when Hebden's father, Paul, died in 2018, Snape and the rest of the Fortet carass rallied around. So he would call, his dad would come to all the shows, hitting it off with Skrillex and Floating Points and manning the DJ booth with Madlib. So it became this like kind of crew of people that he hung around with who were also his best friends and were there for him. So I'm not going to make sense then in those terms then that they started making music together. And I think for a lot of people who would have been only familiar with Fortet and what he has done, they would have been really surprised that he's like DJing with Skrillex. And then the whole triumvirate of the three of them, Fred again, Skrillex and Fortet playing together. But I think he says pleasing crowds can be a lonely occupation, but the people I'm working with are my best friends. So all these things are connected. So he really began to, embrace that much, much more, which led to a lot of the stuff that we saw earlier this year. Like Skrillex had a couple of new albums, and himself, Fred again, and Kieran Hebden playing that 5-hour set at Madison Square Garden, and then playing in Times Square, and then Coachella when Frank Ocean pulled out. So then, and that's when you see this kind of like Fortet basically having a lot of fun doing remixes of Taylor Swift, which he said he did because his daughter wanted to he was like, I want to make a song for my daughter. So he did. And that's what he did. He made a Fortet Taylor Swift remix. But you can see him having fun in these gigs. And I think a good example of it is he's kind of become this like little meme thing where he's playing this track Country Rhythm all the time. So here's a little bit of what he's been doing. So, like, here's a man playing Madison Square Garden, playing Coachella, and just having the crack because he's like, I can play this because no one else. I think they have that kind of vibe, which I think is, you know, I think that is something that most DJs should aspire to as well. Is like, you can pull anything out at any point. And so he says in that recent Guardian interview, he doesn't really do interviews for Fortet these days. He doesn't really like talking about his music, doesn't like talking about himself. And in that interview, that's where we find out that his sister is manages Shania Twain.
Queen.
So I'm like, you're like, whoa, what?
Two queens.
But yeah, he talks about, Yeah, he talks about playing with Skrillex and kind of going, well, nothing is off limits, because when they were playing together at Camden Underworld in London, Skrillex stopped everything and played the Lion King theme song. And since then, they looked at each other and were like, well, nothing is too chaotic to mix out of. Mm-hmm. So this is where this country rhythm kind of meme stuff came from, this kind of EDM anthem from a French producer that he just kept dropping into things. So it became a lot of fun for him.
I want to suggest to listeners, I remember mentioning it ages ago when we were first talking about the Skrillex Fortet thing, and I couldn't remember the name of the documentary. But there's a, well, it's a video essay online. It's by a person named Timba on Toast, T-I-M-B-A-H on Toast. And it's a 1 hour video called All My Homies Hate Skrillex, a story about what happened with Dubstep. It's absolutely,
I did watch that after you mentioned it.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. It's not as salty as it sounds. Like, it really is a story about like a community. If you're interested in how like the smoking ban can kill a kind of a community of music goers, it's very good for that. Like, it's a really, really great story. It's great storytelling about dubstep and about why it is that dubstep fans don't like Skrillex, or don't like what Skrillex kind of did with and to dubstep. But just while we're on Skrillex, I just wanted to shout that out. It's really, really excellent.
Yeah. And that kind of brings us up to date, really, in terms of what's been going on with Forte. And he's just consistently releasing music.
He announced a new album, I believe, didn't he, earlier this year?
Well, he had that really lovely psych jazz Darkness collaboration with a drummer called William Taylor. One of my, again, another favorite track. I think he's just always there for me in terms of like, I always want to hear the Fortet track that's just been released. And I very rarely go, oh, that's something I don't really like. Even if it's like this 12-minute, like, psych jazz, obviously, I'm like, this is fucking great. I love it. So he is that artist for me. He's one of my favorites. He is the one that is always willing to, I mean, I guess it's surprising in lots of ways what has happened to him. And I think it's kind of beautiful in a way, because it's like, okay, here's this man who could have been very introverted and just been making this introspective music. But he's clear, he has this weird like career arc that has taken him beyond that. He's where he's playing to 70,000-100,000 people at a festival now. And you're like, that's mad.
Yeah.
But he's not really like compromising anything on his own. And then shout out to also his live shows. Now, I haven't seen any of his recent ones, but the ones he's been doing in London with the kind of a light fixtures with Squid Soup, really, really cool and impressive, where the entire venue is covered in lights and over the audience's head and stuff like that. So just really, really cool, very, very interesting. Always trying to do stuff that is, pushing himself in his own way, I think. And I think, yeah, I think he's still releasing brilliant, brilliant music, like the stuff that he released this year. Three Drums, a Fortet track, and then that William Tyler stuff. There is a playlist I will share with Patreon listeners, and it's called Fortet Listen Closely, 53 songs, 5 hours and 9 minutes. Definitely some of my favorite music of his over the years. And he's even like, I mean, I tell you what, like from the Skrillex album earlier this year, I love the song that he has a hand in, because I think it's like, it's really cool. It has a bit of that Fortet buzz to it. This is the song Butterflies. Let's play a bit of that. Very much a meeting of minds again. Let's see if we can hear some of the Fortet on this track.
Everybody loves somebody, whoa. But I know you're not anybody, whoa. Butterflies when you touch my body, whoa. Let your love, baby, shine me, shine me. We'll be right back.
that has to be the forte bit for me, the twinkling belly drums things. Yeah, really nice. But yeah, there's so much we didn't cover there that is from his extensive catalog. And so I think that's kind of an overview of Fortet's music. We could go on and on and play music. But if you want to join us soon on November, Wednesday, November 8th, and actually listen to Rounds together. We're going to be doing that in the Big Romance. So do the, it's called Listen Closely, Fortet Rounds. It's the first of a series of listening events that we'll be putting on. We'll be doors at 7 o'clock. We'll be doing a little album playback, of course, but also having myself and Andrea will have a chat about the album and the artist. So kind of like a little private live podcast, right?
Yeah.
Tiny little sure. bit, like 10 minutes.
And we won't be releasing we'll it have as a bit podcast. Of a chat. It's just on the night.
No, we won't be. Yeah. This is what this is for. But yeah, coming down to us, tickets will be on Eventbrite as well. So come on
you
down
can see
and
proof
say hello and hang
if
out.
If you need it, that I leave the house sometimes.
Proof if needed. Yeah, exactly. All right, so I think there's loads of Fortet there to discover if you haven't already. And I think even for myself, like I heard stuff that I hadn't heard before from the early days, so
yeah,
so really great.
I hadn't
again,
heard that
one of my favorite artists
remix before, and it's
oh
great.
Yeah, I have that on record. I have it on a 10-inch record. So nice. So nice. But yeah, we'll be on that night as well. I think we'll be playing some music on vinyl that we have that might be related to that a little bit, so we'll bring some stuff along, so hopefully that'll be fun. Okay. Thanks Andrea,
thanks Niall
for listening closely with me and for Fortet's music, and yeah, patreon.com/909 to support us directly, and come and join the Discord as I say every week, because community is really important, lads.
Yeah,
really important.
I don't
really
know
nice
if you know
there is
community's good
yeah, so that's it. That's it from the 909 podcast this week. Thanks so much for listening. And if you like us, tell your friends and maybe throw us a few quid as well. Thanks.
Bye.
All right. Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.